In this series, we follow Vera O'Riordan, representing UCC 98.3 FM at the COP26 conference. Vera is a PhD student working with the Marine and Renewable Energy Institute based at the Environmental Research Institute here in UCC.
Hey guys, I'm here with Jonathan Banks, who's the International Director of the Clean Air Task Force. And you just want to tell me what you do and what that is?
Yeah, so my job is to work with countries around the world to help them develop policies to reduce methane emissions from a variety of sources. We spend a lot of time targeting methane emission reductions in the oil and gas sector, but we also work to reduce methane emissions from landfills and waste, as well as agriculture and coal mines.
Okay, yeah, there's been a lot about methane emissions here at COP now. Can you just give a quick overview of why they're so important?
Yeah, so methane is what we call a short-lived climate pollutant. And the science of short-lived climate pollutants only emerged in the early 2000s when scientists started to realize how a certain set of pollutants interacted with the climate. And basically what it is methane goes into the atmosphere and it disappears from the atmosphere after about 12 years. But at the same time, those first 12 years that it's in the atmosphere, it has a tremendous impact on climate. It's actually 87 times more powerful than carbon dioxide during those first 12 years. And so it has a huge, huge impact on climate. It's actually responsible for about half of the warming that we're currently feeling. And in addition, for me, the thing that's the most exciting, and this is the other part that's unique about a short-lived climate pollutant, is because it has a short life, if we start reducing methane now, we can actually have an impact on changing temperature in our lifetimes, in the next two decades. And you know, when you talk about climate change, we're talking about reducing CO2, which we absolutely have to do. That's critical for long-term climate health. But if I reduce a ton of CO2 today, I will see no impact for 100, maybe even hundreds of years. But with methane, if I reduce methane now, I can see a temperature change in the next two decades. And so at this COP, this COP has been unique in its attention to the issue of methane emissions. And it's really spawned by two major studies that came out this year. There was a study in March called the Global Methane Assessment that set out what we would need to do to reduce methane emissions to keep ourselves on a pathway to 1.5 degrees. And then there was a second study by the IPCC, their annual report on climate, that looked at it and highlighted the overall impact of methane emissions and the opportunity for emission reductions. And from all of that work, there was the spawning of an effort at the country level to bring together national governments to pledge to reduce their methane emissions. And so there was the launch of what's known as the Global Methane Pledge. This was on Tuesday. All the days are starting to run together. on Tuesday, they launched the Global Methane Pledge with over 100 countries from around the world committing to reducing methane emissions quickly by 2030. And so for me, it's a really exciting opportunity. Now, that's just a pledge. Doesn't mean a damn thing. But what the pledge does is it opens the door to in-country action, and that's really where an organization like my own, as well as others, comes into play. We work directly with countries to help them come up with those policies that starts to cut methane. And so having presidents and prime ministers say, we're going to reduce methane emissions, that opens the door for action at the national level.
Yeah.
In the space of oil and gas, there are already technologies and practices that exist today that can cut emissions by 75%. And that's just, you know, doing things at the sites to reduce emissions. I always talk about within the oil and gas space that the technology is not rocket science, it's plumbing. Because it's really going out there with wrenches and fixing things. And in some cases, it's not even that. Sometimes oil and gas workers will leave hatches open on tops of tanks. you have methane just spewing out of the tanks.
Oh, wow.
And it's literally just close the darn hatch and we can cut off a lot of methane emissions. That's not very high-tech technology.
Okay, so that seems easy enough. Like,
yes.
I feel like the other sectors might be more difficult to talk about. Mm-hmm. I know there's a process of like you can flare off the methane.
So in the other areas, so I'll start with landfills. Landfills is kind of a two-stage approach. Landfills and waste, I should say it that way. But landfills and waste is kind of a two-step approach. In landfills, we create methane because we send organics, we send food to the landfill. And when we do that, that food gets buried in the landfill and it starts to turn itself into methane that is then released out of the landfill. So we have landfills all over the world that are leaking massive amounts of methane. There's been recently, there's been some really great work using satellites to look at some of the larger landfills around the world, and you could see these massive plumes of methane coming out of the landfills. We have to deal with that methane, and the way you deal with that methane is in most places you can basically drill a well into the landfill. Stick a big pipe down in there and you suck it out like a straw and you suck the methane out of the landfill. It doesn't get rid of it all, but it can bring out a lot of that methane, and then you can put that methane to use. You can use it to power the trash trucks, or you can use it to power create energy. But the last thing you want is that you don't want that gas going to the atmosphere.
Okay. So that's biogas then?
That's basically biogas, yes. Now, in the grand scheme of things, though, we never want that to happen, though. So going forward, the only way that we really tackle this problem is to stop sending food waste to the landfill. And so that's what we call organics diversion. And in many countries, this is already happening, where organics are being collected at the curb, or people are composting at home.
Yeah.
But that has to become a more universal practice around the world to really tackle that problem.
I think that's what a lot of people aren't aware of, that just like your food waste in your bin is contributing to climate change.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it necessitates both policy change as well as human behavior change, because at the end of the day, having a green bin doesn't mean that you actually put stuff in there. It can sit in your house nice and clean and empty. but you have to put stuff in there. And so there's a human behavior change that has to go into this. And that's pervasive throughout the methane space, because there are lots of things that humans, by changing their actions and their behavior, can contribute to reducing methane emissions. There's a lot of methane emission reductions that can be achieved by being more efficient with our energy systems, you know, like having more efficient light bulbs, turning your lights out, everything. All of that contributes to the less use of electricity, which contributes to less fossil fuel demand, which contributes to less methane. But that's not a direct policy towards methane. You would never target methane through that kind of a policy.
Okay,
so it's an indirect policy. Other things like if you have a better, healthier diet and eat less meat, that contributes to reducing methane emissions, but it's an indirect contribution to reducing methane emissions. We tend to focus, as our organization, we tend to focus mostly on the ones that we can work on that are direct policy impacts. We're not a very large organization, and changing human behavior is definitely something that's a bigger thing than what our little organization can achieve. But in the coal mining sector, there's lots of old coal mines that continue to leak gas out of the coal mines, as well as active coal mines around the world that leak a lot of methane from them. The largest source of coal mine methane in the world is China. If this was on video, we could show a chart, and the Chinese coal mine methane emissions would be up here, and every other country would be down here.
Okay.
It's just a magnitude of, you know, 10 or more of the difference. And so we could almost solve the entire coal mine methane problem by addressing coal mine methane emissions in China. But those technologies are readily available. It's just more about political will and taking that on.
But it's great to know that the solutions are there.
Yes. Yeah. No, absolutely. I mean, I've worked on a lot of climate and energy issues. I've been doing this for 22 years. But in most of the other areas that I work, the technologies you're talking about, oh, this is a $5 billion project, yeah, or this is a $10 billion project, and it takes 20 years to build it or something like that. The beauty about methane is not only are the actions that we take, not only are they rapid in having an impact on reducing climate change, but just the sheer actions we can take, they are very quick things that we can do. But everything exists. We don't have to create a new gadget to be able to do this.
That's brilliant. I just want to talk a bit more about agricultural emissions,
yes,
maybe. And so Ireland has signed the methane pledge,
yes,
a 30% reduction by 2030, I think.
Yes.
The Taoiseach has been very, he has added that it is an overall reduction, so it's not
that
a 30%.
It's a collective goal.
Per country, exactly. And Ireland's main methane emissions, I'll have to look this up now, but a good deal of it is from agriculture.
That's their number one for sure.
Yeah.
By far.
Definitely. It'll be a difficult task achieving reductions in that now because a lot of people depend on it.
Yes. No, and that's a great question. The reason that the Global Methane Pledge is a collective goal is because of countries like Ireland, whose dominant source of methane emissions is from the agriculture sector.
Yeah.
Every country is unique in its emissions profile. New Zealand has a very similar emissions profile to Ireland. And New Zealand, in signing on to the Global Methane Pledge, they really had to struggle with this. They had to look at this and think through how are we going, because they didn't want to just sign on to it, just, hey, fine, here's a pledge, fine, we'll sign on. They wanted to be an active participant and contribute to the overall goal. But the collective goal exists for countries like Ireland and New Zealand because it recognizes that in places where technology can cut emissions dramatically, so in the oil and gas space, in the coal mine methane space, even in the landfill space, in those areas, in those countries that have a lot of that, it's on the order of climate change, it's a relatively easy thing for them to tackle. And then it's just kind of slowly picked up speed, but we're going up the curve now. So now it feels like we're really going fast. And so it's really exciting for me to see the attention this is getting. And, you know, just this week, sitting here in this methane pavilion that we're in, following the methane pledge announcement on Tuesday, I've been approached by at least four countries that said, hey, can you help us develop policies? We signed the pledge. We want to do something about this. Our president put us on this. Now I have to deliver. And so to me, that's the exciting thing because the doors are opening for this to take place. And I'm thrilled. I can't wait to take the next steps because that's at the end of the day, we have to get emission reductions. It's not about just a giant press statement saying, oh, yay, 105 countries signed on to this. That doesn't mean diddly. We have to get the emission reduction. So that's what I'm excited about.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, John.
My pleasure. My pleasure. It's great to talk with you.